Chapter 4. Tarzan Jadguru. As Tarzan and Amit clambered back to the vestibule of Panat Lee's cave, and took their stand beside Taden in readiness for whatever eventuality might follow the death of Esat, the sun that topped the eastern hills touched also the figure of a sleeper upon a distant, thorn-covered step, awakening him to another day of tireless tracking along a faint and rapidly disappearing spoor. For a time silence reigned in the Khorel Jah. The tribesmen waited, looking now down upon the dead thing that had been their chief, now at one another, and now at Amat and the two who stood upon his either side. Presently Amat spoke. "I am Amat," he cried. "Who will say that Amat is not Gund of Khorel Jah?" He waited for a taker of his challenge. One or two of the larger young bucks fidgeted restlessly and eyed him, but there was no reply. "Then Amat is Gund," he said with finality. "And now tell me, where are Panat Lee, her father, and her brothers?" An old warrior spoke. "P. Panat Lee should be in her cave. Who should know that better than you who are there now? Her father and her brothers were sent to watch Khorel Lul, but neither of these questions arouse any tumult in our breasts. There is one that does. Can Amat be chief of Khorel Jah, and yet stand at bay against his own people with a Hodan, and that terrible man at his side, that terrible man who has no tail? Hand the strangers over to your people, to be slain as is the way of the Wazdan, and then may Amat be gunned." Neither Tarzan nor Taden spoke then, they but stood watching Amat and waiting for his decision, the ghost of a smile upon the lips of the ape man. Taden, at least, knew that the old warrior had spoken the truth. The Wazdan entertain no strangers, and take no prisoners of an alien race. Then spoke Amat. "Always there is change," he said. "Even the old hills of Paleldon appear never twice alike. The brilliant sun, a passing cloud, the moon, a mist, the changing seasons, the sharp clearness following a storm, these things bring each a new change in our hills. From birth to death, day by day, there is constant change in each of us. Change, then, is one of Jad Ben Otho's laws. And now I, Amat, your Gund, bring another change. Strangers who are brave men and good friends shall no longer be slain by the Wazdan of Khorel Jah." There were growls and murmurings and a restless moving among the warriors as each eyed the others, to see who would take the initiative against Amat, the iconoclast. "Cease your mutterings," admonished the new Gund. I am your chief. My word is your law. You had no part in making me chief. Some of you helped Esat to drive me from the cave of my ancestors. The rest of you permitted it. I owe you nothing. Only these two, whom you would have me kill, were loyal to me. I am Gund, and if there be any who doubts it, let him speak. He cannot die younger. Tarzan was pleased. Here was a man after his own heart. He admired the fearlessness of Amit's challenge, and he was a sufficiently good judge of men to know that he had listened to no idle bluff. Amat would back up his words to the death, if necessary, and the chances were that he would not be the one to die. Evidently the majority of the Khorel Jahans entertained the same conviction. "I will make you a good Gund," said Amat, seeing that no one appeared inclined to dispute his rights. "Why, your wives and daughters will be safe." They were not safe, while Esat ruled. "Go now to your crops and your hunting. I leave to search for Panat Lee. Abon will be gunned while I am away. Look to him for guidance, and to me for an accounting when I return, and may Jad Ben Otho smile upon you." He turned toward Tarzan and the Hodan. "And you, my friends," he said, "are free to go among my people. The cave of my ancestors is yours. Do what you will." "I," said Tarzan, "will go with Amat to search for Panat Lee." "And I," said Taden. Amat smiled. "Gee good," he exclaimed. "And when we have found her, we shall go together upon Tarzan's business and Taden's. Where first shall we search?" He turned toward his warriors. "Who knows where she may be?" None knew other than that Panat Lee had gone to her cave with the others the previous evening. There was no clue, no suggestion as to her whereabouts. "Show me where she sleeps," said Tarzan. "Let me see something that belongs to her, an article of her apparel. Then, doubtless, I can help you." two young warriors climbed closer to the ledge upon which Amit stood. They were Insad and Odan. It was the latter who spoke. Gund of Kor-El-Ja, he said, we would go with you to search for Panit Lee. It was the first acknowledgement of Amit's chieftainship, and immediately following it the tenseness that had prevailed seemed to relax. The warriors spoke aloud instead of in whispers, and the women appeared from the mouths of caves, as with the passing of a sudden storm. Insad and Odan had taken the lead, and now all seemed glad to follow. Some came to talk with Amit and to look more closely at Tarzan. Others, heads of caves, gathered their hunters, and discussed the business of the day. The women and children prepared to descend to the fields with the youths and the old men, whose duty it was to guard them. Odan and Insad shall go with us, announced Amit. We shall not need more. Tarzan, come with me, and I shall show you where Panit Lee sleeps, though why you should wish to know I cannot guess, she is not there. I have looked for myself. The two entered the cave, where Amit led the way to the apartment in which Esad had surprised Panit Lee the previous night. All here are hers, said Amit, except the war club lying on the floor, that was Esad's. The ape man moved silently about the apartment, the quivering of his sensitive nostrils scarcely apparent to his companion, who only wondered what good purpose could be served here and chafed at the delay. Come, said the ape man, presently, and led the way toward the outer recess. Here their three companions were awaiting them. Tarzan passed to the left side of the niche, and examined the pegs that lay within reach. He looked at them, but it was not his eyes that were examining them. Keener than his keen eyes was that marvelously trained sense of scent that had first been developed in him during infancy under the tutorage of his foster mother, Kala, the she-ape, and further sharpened in the grim jungles by that master teacher, the instinct of self-preservation. From the left side of the niche he turned to the right. Amit was becoming impatient. Let us be off, he said. We must search for Panit Lee, if we would ever find her. Where shall we search? Asked Tarzan. Amit scratched his head. Where? He repeated. Why, all Pal-el-Don, if necessary. A large job, said Tarzan. See, come, he added, she went this way, and he took to the pegs that led aloft toward the summit of the cliff. Here he followed the scent easily, since none had passed that way since Panit Lee had fled. At the point at which he had left the permanent pegs, and resorted to those carried with her, Tarzan came to an abrupt halt. As she went this way to the summit, he called back to Amit, who was directly behind him. But there are no pegs here. I do not know how you know that she went this way, said Amit, but we will get pegs. Insad, return and fetch climbing pegs for five. The young warrior was soon back, and the pegs distributed. Amit handed five to Tarzan, and explained their use. The ape man returned one. I need but four, he said. Amit smiled. What a wonderful creature you would be if you were not deformed, he said, glancing with pride at his own strong tail. I admit that I am handicapped, replied Tarzan. Why, you others go ahead, and leave the pegs in place for me. I am afraid that otherwise it will be slow work, as I cannot hold the pegs in my toes as you do. All right, agreed Amit. Taden, Insad, and I will go first. You follow, and Odan bring up the rear, and collect the pegs. We cannot leave them here for our enemies. Can your enemies bring their own pegs? Asked Tarzan. Yes, but it delays them, and makes easier our defense, and they do not know which of all the holes you see are deep enough for pegs. The others are made to confuse our enemies, and are too shallow to hold a peg. At the top of the cliff beside the gnarled tree, Tarzan again took up the trail. Here the scent was fully as strong as upon the pegs, and the ape man moved rapidly across the ridge in the direction of the Kor-El-Lul. Presently he paused and turned toward Amit. Here she moved swiftly, running at top speed, and, Amit, she was pursued by a lion. You can read that in the grass? Asked Odan as the others gathered about the ape man. Tarzan nodded. I do not think the lion got her, he added, but that we shall determine quickly. No, he did not get a look, and he pointed toward the southwest, down the ridge. Following the direction indicated by his finger, the others presently detected a movement in some bushes a couple of hundred yards away. What is it? Asked Ahmat. It is she? And he started toward the spot. Wait, advised Tarzan. It is the lion which pursued her. You can see him? Asked Ta-Den. No, I can smell him. The others looked their astonishment and incredulity, but of the fact that it was indeed a lion they were not left long in doubt. Presently the bushes parted and the creature stepped out in full view, facing them. It was a magnificent beast, large and beautifully maned, with the brilliant leopard spots of its kind well marked and symmetrical. For a moment it eyed them and then, still chafing at the loss of its prey earlier in the morning, it charged. The Paleldonians unslung their clubs, and stood waiting the onrushing beast. Tarzan of the Apes drew his hunting knife and crouched in the path of the fanged fury. It was almost upon him, when it swerved to the right and leaped for Ahmat, only to be sent to earth with a staggering blow upon the head. Almost instantly it was up, and though the men rushed fearlessly in, it managed to sweep aside their weapons with its mighty paws. A single blow wrenched Odan's club from his hand, and sent it hurtling against Ta-Den, knocking him from his feet. Taking advantage of its opportunity, the lion rose to throw itself upon Odan, and at the same instant Tarzan flung himself upon its back. Strong, white teeth buried themselves in the spotted neck, mighty arms encircled the savage throat, and the sinewy legs of the ape-man locked themselves about the gaunt belly. The others, powerless to aid, stood breathlessly about as the great lion lunged hither and thither, clawing and biting fearfully and futilely at the savage creature that had fastened itself upon him. Over and over they rolled, and now the onlooker saw a brown hand raised above the lion's side, a brown hand grasping a keen blade. They saw it fall and rise and fall again each time with terrific force, and in its wake they saw a crimson stream trickling down Jaw's gorgeous coat. Now from the lion's throat rose hideous screams of hate and rage and pain as he redoubled his efforts to dislodge and punish his tormentor, but always the tousled black head remained half buried in the dark brown mane and the mighty arm rose and fell to plunge the knife again and again into the dying beast. The Paleldonians stood in mute wonder and admiration. Brave men and mighty hunters they were, and as such the first to accord honor to a mightier. And you would have had me slay him, cried Ahmat, glancing at Ansat and Odan. Jad Ben Otho reward you, that you did not, breathed Ansat. And now the lion lunged suddenly to earth, and with a few spasmodic quiverings lay still. The ape-man rose and shook himself, even as might Jaw, the leopard-coated lion of Paleldon, had he been the one to survive. Odan advanced quickly toward Tarzan. Placing a palm upon his own breast and the other on Tarzan's, Tarzan the Terrible, he said, I ask no greater honor than your friendship. And I know more than the friendship of Ahmat's friends, replied the ape-man simply, returning the other's salute. Do you think, asked Ahmat, coming close to Tarzan and laying a hand upon the other's shoulder, that he got her? No, my friend, it was a hungry lion that charged us. You seem to know much of lions, said Ansat. Had I a brother I could not know him better, replied Tarzan. Then where can she be? Continued Ahmat. We can but follow, while the spoor is fresh, answered the ape-man and again taking up his interrupted tracking he led them down the ridge, and at a sharp turning of the trail to the left, brought them to the verge of the cliff that dropped into the coral lull. For a moment Tarzan examined the ground to the right and to the left, then he stood erect and looking at Ahmat pointed into the gorge. For a moment the Wazdan gazed down into the green rift at the bottom, of which a tumultuous river tumbled downward along its rocky bed, then he closed his eyes, as to a sudden spasm of pain and turned away. You mean she jumped? He asked. To escape the lion, replied Tarzan. He was right behind her. Look, you can see where his forepaws left their impress in the turf as he checked his charge upon the very verge of the abyss. Is there any chance, commenced Ahmat, to be suddenly silenced by a warning gesture from Tarzan? down. Whispered the ape man, many men are coming. They are running from down the ridge. He flattened himself upon his belly in the grass, the others following his example. For some minutes they waited thus, and then the others too, heard the sound of running feet, and now a hoarse shout followed by many more. It is the war cry of the Korolol, whispered Ahmet, the hunting cry of men who hunt men. Presently shall we see them, and if Jad Ben Otho is pleased with us, they shall not too greatly outnumber us. They are many, said Tarzan, 40 or 50, I should say, but how many are the pursued, and how many the pursuers we cannot even guess, except that the latter must greatly outnumber the former, else these would not run so fast. Here they come, said Ta-den. It is Anun, father of Panat Lee, and his two sons, exclaimed O-dan. They will pass without seeing us, if we do not hurry, he added looking at Ahmat, the chief, for a sign. Come, cried the latter, springing to his feet and running rapidly, to intercept the three fugitives. The others followed him. Five friends, shouted Ahmat as Anun, and his sons discovered them. Adan and Yo, echoed O-dan and Ansad. The fugitives scarcely paused as these unexpected reinforcements joined them, but they eyed Ta-den and Tarzan with puzzled glances. The Korolol are many, shouted Anun. W would that we might pause and fight, but first we must warn Essad and our people. Yes, said Ahmat, we must warn our people. Essad is dead, said Ansad. Who is chief? Asked one of Anun's sons. Ahmat, replied O-dan. It is well, cried Anun. Panat Lee said that he would come back and slay Essad. Now the enemy broke into sight behind them. Come, cried Tarzan, let us turn and charge them, raising a great cry. They pursued but three, and when they see eight charging upon them, they will think that many men have come to do battle. They will believe that there are more even than they see, and then one who is swift will have time to reach the gorge, and warn your people. It is well, said Ahmat. Ian, you are swift, carry word to the warriors of Korolja that we fight the Korolol upon the ridge, and that Abon shall send 100 men. Ian, the son of Anun, sped swiftly toward the cliff dwellings of the Korolja, while the others charged the oncoming Korolol, the war cries of the two tribes rising and falling in a certain grim harmony. The leaders of the Korolol paused at sight of the reinforcements, waiting apparently for those behind to catch up with them, and, possibly, also to learn how great a force confronted them. The leaders, swifter runners than their fellows, perhaps, were far in advance, while the balance of their number had not yet emerged from the brush. And now as Ahmat and his companions fell upon them with a ferocity born of necessity, they fell back, so that when their companions at last came in sight of them, they appeared to be in full rout. The natural result was that the others turned and fled. Encouraged by this first success, Ahmat followed them into the brush, his little company charging valiantly upon his either side, and loud and terrifying were the savage yells with which they pursued the fleeing enemy. The brush, while not growing so closely together as to impede progress, was of such height as to hide the members of the party from one another when they became separated by even a few yards. The result was that Tarzan, always swift and always keen for battle, was soon pursuing the enemy far in the lead of the others, a lack of prudence which was to prove his undoing. The warriors of Korolol, doubtless as valorous as their foemen, retreated only to a more strategic position in the brush, nor were they long in guessing that the number of their pursuers was fewer than their own. They made a stand then, where the brush was densest an ambush it was, and into this ran Tarzan of the apes. They tricked him neatly. Yes, sad as is the narration of it, they tricked the wily jungle lord. But then they were fighting on their own ground, every foot of which they knew as you know your front parlor, and they were following their own tactics, of which Tarzan knew nothing. A single black warrior appeared to Tarzan, a laggard in the rear of the retreating enemy, and thus retreating he lured Tarzan on. At last he turned at bay, confronting the ape man with bludgeon and drawn knife, and as Tarzan charged him, a score of burly Wazdan leaped from the surrounding brush. Instantly, but too late, the giant Tarmangani realized his peril. There flashed before him a vision of his lost mate, and a great and sickening regret surged through him with the realization that if she still lived she might no longer hope, for though she might never know of the passing of her lord, the fact of it must inevitably seal her doom. And consequent to this thought there enveloped him a blind frenzy of hatred for these creatures who dared thwart his purpose, and menace the welfare of his wife. With a savage growl he threw himself upon the warrior before him, twisting the heavy club from the creature's hand, as if he had been a little child, and with his left fist backed by the weight and sinew of his giant frame, he crashed a shattering blow to the center of the Wazdan's face, a blow that crushed the bones, and dropped the fellow in his tracks. Then he swung upon the others with their fallen comrades' bludgeon striking, to right and left, mighty, unmerciful blows that drove down their own weapons until that wielded by the ape man was splintered and shattered. On either hand they fell before his cudgel, so rapid the delivery of his blows, so cat-like his recovery, that in the first few moments of the battle he seemed invulnerable to their attack. But it could not last, he was outnumbered 20-1, and his undoing came from a thrown club. It struck him upon the back of the head. For a moment he stood swaying, and then like a great pine beneath the woodsman's axe he crashed to earth. Others of the Korolul had rushed to engage the balance of Ahmet's party. They could be heard fighting at a short distance, and it was evident that the Korolja were falling slowly back, and as they fell Ahmet called to the missing one, colon, Tarzan the Terrible. Tarzan the Terrible. Jadguru, indeed, repeated one of the Korolul rising from where Tarzan had dropped him. T. Tarzan Jadguru. He was worse than that. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.